You're listening to the Diplomats Podcast on Asian Geopolitics. As always, I'm your host, Ankit Panda from New York City.
And this is Prashant Parameswaran from Washington, D.C.
How are you doing this week, Prashant?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing well. And this week, we're going to revisit a topic that we included in one of our 2018 roundup discussions, specifically the roundup on upcoming elections in Asia. And the big news last week was that the Thai government, specifically the Election Commission, with a royal decree, announced an election date for the country. And this is the first time since the May 2014 coup, the military-led coup, that the country will hold general elections. And the date that's been issued is March 24th, which is not too long from now. But Prashant, I thought this would be a good opportunity for us to talk a bit more closely about Thailand, which we discussed briefly in our wrap-up episodes for 2018. But I think there's a lot more going on here, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're at an interesting phase, definitely. Like you said, it's a kind of a five-year mark, right, since the 2014 coup, essentially. And we've seen a number of developments that we've discussed on this podcast before, right? You know, Thailand's chairing the ASEAN, sort of the annually rotating ASEAN chairmanship. It's holding it this year. There have been a number of developments that have been interesting from, you know, we spoke of the previous episode about the U.S.-Philippine and the U.S.-South Korea alliance. Well, the U.S.-Thailand alliance has also been very interesting because the Thais have been making a lot of overtures towards the Chinese. And from a domestic political context, it's been really interesting because, as you noted, I mean, you hinted at it in the opening, which is you have this announcement of elections, but there have been previous postponements, repeated postponements of the elections. The fact that it's actually been mandated by a royal decree is interesting because we've talked about the Thai monarchy, which is a really big influence in Thai politics. But I think all of these factors, you know, whether you look at the domestic political component, you look at how Thailand matters for Southeast Asia, and you also look at this U.S.-China conversation within the wider Indo-Pacific, it really presents us with a really interesting set of possibilities for the next few months out to the election.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's also looking forward to these elections. I think while there is a sense of optimism that we're finally getting general elections in Thailand for the first time in 5 years, half a decade of military rule, I mean, there's also, you know, that kind of fatalistic pessimism that even on the other side of the elections, Thailand will continue to be a heavily military-influenced government, even if you do have sort of a democratic facade resulting in a degree of public approval for the leadership. I don't know. What's your perspective on, you know, just how far the Thai government has come in the last 5 years and how it's likely to end up after the elections?
That's a really important point, because I think that there's been a lot of focus on the election itself and when it's being held. But in fact, over the past 5 years, what we've seen is the military-ruled government has essentially been instituting a series of reforms, proposals, measures to essentially restrict and circumscribe the range of outcomes that are possible. And essentially, the outcome that they want that's possible is that, you know, they're aware that, you know, dating back to essentially 2001, where you had the former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra come to power, there are these various populist forces that are undermining this perceived sort of old establishment, an elite conception that's based on the military, the bureaucracy, and the monarchy, right? And so there are various measures that have been instituted. I think a couple of important ones, you know, one is the fact that irrespective of the actual outcome of the elections, the fact is you have the upper house of parliament that's essentially entirely elected by the military and supportive of the military. So it's going to be really difficult, irrespective of the outcome, for any political party to get a prime ministerial candidate that's going to be not aligned or at least supportive of a military government. So
yeah,
that's one. The second one that is really important is, I mean, we've referenced this in our previous episode as well, and I encourage listeners to check this out, the one that we did end of last year. But Thailand is essentially, I mean, it's regarded as a democracy, but it's been operating in a very unfree environment in the past few years, right? As you hinted, I mean, the notion of suppression and repression of political voices, that's been going on for several years. So I think there's a big worry, irrespective of the election outcome, as you pointed out. I mean, how are people going to react in general, irrespective of the outcome? I mean, one potential scenario is a return to what we saw in years previous, right, where there's violent protests on the streets, and essentially it sort of raises the question of whether the military will have to intervene in some level again, and then we're kind of back to square one. So I think your question is really valid in terms of, you know, looking beyond just the holding of the elections and what this actually means for the country.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are a lot of questions surrounding this issue. So just before recording, I did look up some of the pre-election polling, and so Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha, who's the general who led the coup back in May 2014 and has been in charge of the country ever since, he appears to be polling quite favorably, and he has the support of several parties. I mean, maybe this is just, my kind of inexpert perspective, but it seems like he's pretty well positioned here too to potentially come out on top.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's what makes this election very difficult to predict, right? I think the conventional notion was that post 2001, these idea of populist parties around Thaksin Shinawatra and the Shinawatra family in general, the former prime minister, enjoyed tremendous popular support. But the fact is, we really don't know where this is right now, just because, I mean, a number of variables, right? Like one, it's been a number of years since Thailand's actually held an election, so we don't know how things are actually trending. And we've had these anti-democratic measures that are being imposed in terms of repression and suppression. It's very difficult to predict that. The second is, I mean, we've seen a whole slew of political parties that have arisen, and the campaigning period has actually been quite truncated. So we really don't know what people's support actually is. I mean, you can sort of look anecdotally at some of the polling that you mentioned, social media outposts by Thais that are very frustrated that there's no election that is actually being held. But the fact is, this is an election where you actually have a pro-military party that's actually running for office that has hinted in no uncertain terms that they could potentially take Prayut Chan-o-cha as being their prime minister. So essentially, what you could have, and I think this is the big fear among experts and analysts, that you could have a government where the popular support is actually for the opposition, a sort of pro-Thaksin Shinawatra or populist government. But you actually have a prime minister that's either Prayut Chan-o-cha, the current leader, or you could have another member of the military establishment essentially ruling. And that creates a very interesting divide, right, in terms of what people have voted for and how that's actually being translated into legislative and political priorities.
Yeah, no, I mean that sounds like a recipe for unrest broadly. But I mean also looking at the military's post-election influence, I mean there is this, the 20-year national plan that the military's drawn up that effectively, regardless of who the leader is going to have to hew to that. So I mean strategically there's going to be very little direction. But I mean, I guess the question I have is I think we both agree that the election isn't going to magically result in a free and fair democratic Thailand, but how do we get back to a Thailand that looks more like the country that it was in the early 2000s, so to speak? So is there a path after this election that can credibly bring the country back to a greater sense of democracy without the military's influence in it, especially after the constitutional changes and the creation of the Junta Council that's going to retain its influence after the elections? It just seems like Thailand is sealing in a longer term period of military influence here.
Absolutely. I think that's the big question, right? Whether Thailand can return to the state of normalcy or whether we will continue to see this sort of seemingly endless transition period that it's going through, where it's trying to sort out, what really is the balance between these populist forces that are emerging and the fact that these forces can't actually be elected, it seems, without the old established elites being content at their status and how that's being affected. And that's, as we said before, previous episodes, that's affected Thailand's foreign policy as well, right? Like Thailand's been seen within Southeast Asia and the Asia Pacific more generally as a big contributor. Whether you look at peacekeeping operations, whether you look at foreign policy doctrine, it's one of the U.S. Relationships in Southeast Asia. It's one of two treaty allies, the other being the Philippines. And there's really been a big sense of drift in Thai foreign policy, right? I mean, we're on an Asia geopolitics podcast here, and we've talked several times about how Thailand historically has been a really big contributor for ideas, but the trends that we've seen, especially from folks sitting here in Washington, have been very troubling. Whether it's Thailand buying Chinese submarines, The fact that the Thais are looking very domestically focused in terms of some of their economic priorities. You set out that you talked about that 20-year strategy. That's essentially a attempt by the military to impose a set of conditions for any ruling regime or party that takes over to say, these are the priorities that we need. And on the other hand, while they're doing this long-term perspective, the other thing that's been occurring is heading into the March elections, we've seen a number of priorities that seem to be rushed, right? Like, so what the military has planned on buying a number of sets of defense equipment, including from China. I've noticed a speeding towards some of the conclusion of these agreements because the military recognizes that we're heading into a period of uncertainty. And so, you have a number of variables here that matters. And I mean, it's worth noting again, I mean, Thailand's holding this, this chair of ASEAN position until the end of December. And the last time Thailand held this chairmanship and it went through internal political turmoil, there were protests that directly interfered with the holding of some of these meetings among Southeast Asian leaders. So
Right.
I certainly hope that doesn't happen. And I think they're probably going to manage it a lot better this time. But it's worth remembering that this is a very active foreign policy year for Thailand, but it's also one that is going to be very interesting to watch in terms of its domestic political evolution too.
Yeah, no, I mean, you referenced the uncertainty during the last ASEAN chairmanship. I was actually thinking that there were rumors that Bangkok was going to be a host to the Trump-Kim summit. I was just wondering. I mean, there's no way with the upcoming elections if they were doing it at the end of February. But it sounds like 2019 is really going to put the country in the spotlight, both in terms of the democratic transition and the chairmanship of ASEAN. But it might be good to go over this again a bit, just for the sake of our listeners who might not have caught the previous podcast where we talked a bit about Thailand's priorities for its chairmanship of ASEAN. Prashant, since you watched this very closely, I know this is mostly you talking on this podcast, but I was wondering if you could just go over those for us, just so we have a better sense of what the Thais are planning to do with their 1 year chairmanship in ASEAN.
Sure, it's been a real mixed bag of priorities. I think, as is traditional with these chairmanships, the Thais have a number of priorities that they've advanced. And I think under the junta government, there's been a focus on, for example, environmental priorities. There's some focus on society and the fact that Thailand wants to help ASEAN confront the issue of an aging population in Southeast Asia and what this means. There are priorities on cyber cooperation, some priorities on maritime security. But I think the big question for Thailand's ASEAN chairmanship, if I were to just simplify it in one or two lines, is at a time when Thailand is facing so many challenges domestically, at a time when, as we've referenced on this podcast, ASEAN and regionalism and multilateralism in general has been in significant challenge in Southeast Asia and in Asia more generally, and at a time where we're seeing this notion of the Indo-Pacific and greater US-China rivalry and questions about, what are the positions of these so-called middle powers, whether it's Thailand or Malaysia or Indonesia. Can Thailand handle all of this at the time when it has so many questions about its domestic politics? And I think that's the big question that we're going to see throughout the year, whether it's management of the South China Sea issue, whether it's North Korea. I definitely agree with you that, if this were an expectation that Thailand would take an outsized position on it, we shouldn't count on that. But it is a reality that the United States, particularly under the Trump administration, has been leaning on ASEAN and Southeast Asian countries to take a bigger position on these regional and global issues. You need to contribute more burden sharing. But I think from a Thai perspective, it's very much, given all the things that we're confronting domestically, how can we handle all of this? And I think that's a question that's going to permeate discussions throughout the year.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that overview, Prashant. I think we'll end it here this week and keep this one a little bit on the short side. But yeah, for our listeners, that's something to look forward to in Asia that really I think is flying under the radar if you're primarily taking in your news on Asia from traditional Western sources. The Thai election hasn't really been prominent, but it is a major moment for this country that is coming up on 5 years of military rule this year. And I guess we'll see how things pan out, and maybe we'll be back to talk about it after the election, Prashant.
Yeah, sounds good.
Great. Thanks a lot for joining me. And for our listeners, if you like what you heard on the podcast this week, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you've been a subscriber for a while but you haven't yet left us a review on either iTunes or Google Play, please go ahead and do that. It really helps get the word out about the show. So thanks a lot for listening, and we'll be back next week with more.